From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Are any of your houseplants edible? A new book by the owners of the beloved rare plant nursery called Logie's Greenhouses suggests that we make room for some delicious candidates among our potted indoor plants. Their book is called Edible Houseplants, Grow Your Own Citrus, Coffee, Vanilla, and 43 Other Tasty Tropical Plants, and we'll learn more about it in a moment, but first, these messages.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs. Flower bulbs for landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners at colorblends.com. Season your spring with Color Blends this fall.
My guest today is Byron Martin, who with Laura Lynn Martin co-owns and operates Logie's Greenhouses in Danielson, Connecticut, a family business since 1892 that specializes in distinctive plants. Together, they've just written Edible Houseplants, and I'm so glad to welcome him today. Hi, Byron. How are you?
Hi. I'm good.
Good. So before we get started, I'll say that we'll have with the transcript of this show over on awaytogarden.com, we'll have a book giveaway. And I've been enjoying the book. I had no idea about some of these. I mean, I knew vanilla was an orchid, but I sort of didn't think about sugarcane being in the grass family and cinnamon related to laurels. And oh my goodness, there's a lot of possibilities, huh?
There are. And and we keep discovering more. So, you know, the book has been a while since it's been written and published, and there's actually chapters that could be added to it.
Uh-oh, part two.
Right.
The sequel. I think, you know, with readers and listeners over the years, I think among the edible plants that they can live with indoors, either part or all of the year, I think the citrus are the most common that I hear about. I don't know if that's the most popular sort of category in your edible part of your business, but
So citrus definitely have a place in the indoor culture, and there's a couple reasons for it. One is that they fruit relatively young and are quite prolific, and the other is that they do tolerate indoor growing conditions very well. And there's just a couple of things in terms of the culture that once you get it down, you pretty much can grow any citrus and still keep it small enough. So we always think of citrus as large trees, but small enough in a container for many, many years. In our book, we have a picture of a Kalamundan orange, a variegated one that it's got to be over 35 years old now. And it stayed in that same pot for at least 30 years. So,
wow.
You know, they're long lasting, they go for a long time, they're very productive. Some of these citrus plants put out tremendous amounts of fruit on a yearly basis. And the other thing about citrus are is they're pretty forgiving to like erratic watering. We as gardeners, you know, it's a hard thing. You know, I mean, your dog will tell you when it's thirsty, but the plant probably doesn't tell you as loudly.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, you may forget, and then, you know, a lot of plants collapse particularly if they're soft growing or transpire very easy.
Yes. But these are tougher than that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk about recommended varieties for those of us who kind of want the best chance of success if we're getting started with citrus and want to adopt something. But first, you know, just, and you've sort of alluded to some of it, are there some basic sort of citrus growing pointers and kinds of conditions that we need if we're thinking about delving into the world of citrus? Like, is it a lot of light, or is it certain temperatures or humidity, or what are sort of the basics, if there are basics?
So basically there's going to be a need for good light. Mm-hmm. And this is the limiting factor, of course, of growing anything in your home, whether you have the quality light that's needed for whatever plant you're trying to grow. And citrus really, I mean, you look at citrus groves and they're out in the open, they're getting full sun. So they really need a south window if you have it, or an east-west or a combination southeast-southwest window to grow them with direct light coming on them. And many people, of course, grow them, put them outside for the summertime, and they where they grow, you know, very vigorously. That's obviously their growing season. And then bring them in to lower light conditions in the fall and hold them. And the downside to doing that too late and under too lower light is you're going to get leaf drop. And you usually get some leaf drop anyway. We have a lot of questions about this, you know, and not only on, on many plants. You put them out and and it's really about that reduced light. And I always say that for humans to, you know, sense light is entirely different than a plant. I mean, we have a window and light comes in and we see everything in the room, but for a plant, it's a whole different ball game. They really need that higher light level, the high light plants. And that's why, you know, there are low light house plants. And there even are some that will grow and do quite well under in shadier conditions in the home, and that can yield fruit and or something like cinnamon that can yield a spice for you.
Yeah. So I watched a video of you, and I'll share the video with a transcript of the show also because it was great, a bit sort of a basic overview of growing citrus. And there was, you recommend growing, especially if people are having trouble transferring the plants to clay pots. Why is that helpful? Why is a terracotta a clay pot?
So clay transpires or lets out water. And if you're growing in clay as opposed to plastic, you're going to get a quicker dry down.
Okay.
So one of the great limitations in growing citrus is root disease. These are pathogens that get into the root system. Generally, the stress on them is during the wintertime. So whenever somebody sends us a picture of a sad citrus plant and wants to know what it is, the answer is first tap it out of the pot and look for live, healthy roots and or brown dead roots.
Right.
And those roots didn't die from old age. They died from a pathogen. And so the pathogens that generally affect them are Pythium and Rhizoctonia, or there's a couple other organisms that affect them. And they generally thrive under damp conditions. So when the soil remains wet or moist for too long, that's when these problems start to arise. Now, it's also a relationship between the disease and fertilizer, that's excessive amounts of fertilizer tend to make bigger cells in the plant. We don't ever see them. Of course, you have to use magnification. And those larger cells are not as tough and hard and resilient. And so the pathogens have a way to get into them when the tissue is softer. Mm. However, if you grow a plant, and it's not only citrus, this is the other plants that you might struggle with that have these susceptibilities. If you grow them under stress, it tends to eliminate that problem. And a clay pot is definitely going to give the plant a quicker dry down, more drought stress than a plastic pot.
Interesting. So we want good light. There's this advantage of avoiding the potential for root disease by letting them drain well and so forth. You just mentioned fertilizer. You know, I've always backed off on feeding once we get into the lower light. You know, I'm a northern grower like you are, and once we get into the lower light season. But yet I know some people who fertilize year round with their indoor plants. I don't. Would you back off in this time of year into the
Depends upon the light level that they have. Now,
okay.
Most every plant, not all plants, but most every plant that we have that we grow has a very slow period or stops growing in the winter. Because here we're in Connecticut, and when you get down to the depth of winter, which is, you know, the 21st of December, and that period going in and coming out into January, there is just enough light outside to grow a plant.
Yeah.
When you go inside or you get into a greenhouse with all the structure over the top of you, it's gone. And so everything slows down to a crawl or stops. And that's actually an important time for citrus because it's that flush that happens usually in February when we see things starting to wake up that all your buds appear. So, you know, citrus, if you go into citrus growing areas in late winter or very early spring, you know, they're all in bloom and you can smell the orange blossoms and flowers.
Yes.
Yeah. And so generally we don't want to fertilize at that time of year. However, you can do that. You just have to, you know, make sure that you're not putting so much on that you damage the plant. And there's no real good reason to force growth at that time of year, because whatever's forced is still going to be struggling under that low light level.
Right. Right. So I want to talk about some of the, I mean, in the book, there are just, and again, there's so many other kinds of plants, but we're just talking about mostly about citrus today. But I mean, the range of diversity, even within the citrus, I mean, a lot of people have probably heard or had recommended to them or seen at the nursery in the indoor plant area, Meyer lemons. That's sort of one of the most popular ones. Right. That's, yeah. But there's so much more.
Right. Well, Meyer's a very good one. And yeah. Of all the lemons, if you line all the lemons up and you try Meyer, it has the greatest flavor. But there are other ones. So the limes and lemons tend to not have a set flowering time. They do flower like most citrus at the end of winter, early spring, but they also can flower off season. But the finger limes will do that. And so there's a long period where these plants can have more fruit on them than what we normally would see on just, say, a tangerine or a grapefruit or a navel orange. They also grow faster. So the edibles, like the citrus sinensis, which is our, you know, our juice orange or edible orange or tangelos and such things as that, they have a specific growth cycle that they go through, grapefruit, where they grow in that first spring flush. They may put another flush out and then it's over. So you get two flushes, maybe three flushes a year. However, lemons and limes don't ever stop.
Oh.
And we have this old Ponderosa lemon in our greenhouses. For any of your listeners that want to come to the greenhouses, you can see it. It's actually, the fruit is ripening right now. It's been in our greenhouses since 1900. And it's been planted in the ground, so it happily lives in this old greenhouse. It's one of the original greenhouses that the business started in. And we harvest off of that thousands of cuttings a year. That just keeps it from going up through the glass. So
wow.
We shoot up everything on the glass. And we root them, and that's when, you know, we sell them. And this flowering set, you can almost all year round have fruit on the tree. And that's because it'll do its spring flush, and then there's some stragglers that come along, and then in the summertime you'll get some blooms. And so there's fruit on it almost. So there's a period when usually it's pretty thin, and that's because it's an orange, it's a lemon or a lime. And so the key lime, the Persian lime, that would be our commerce lime that you find in the grocery store.
Yes.
And then, you know, lemons, Eureka lemon, Ponderosa lemon, and there's lots of others, but, you know, those are some more popular ones.
Go ahead.
Yeah, they're really great houseplants. But, you know, if you've done that or you want to get out to some place where you can, like, eat something that's, like, really sweet, then you need to move into the oranges and all those subtypes, you know, tangelos, temples, tangerines, that's reticulata, and even grapefruit do very well. Probably one of my most favorite of all the citrus, at least for us in the north here, is the Ujiksu lemon. And it's really not a lemon. It's a tangelo with yellow skin.
Oh, so, is that the sweet lemon, quote unquote?
Yeah,
the sweet, yeah.
It is. Well, I mean, we have a lot of fruit here over the season, and it is probably the sweetest thing you can ever put in your mouth. And I'm sure that it has something to do with, you know, holding its sweetness in a greenhouse in Connecticut as opposed to, you know, growing in Florida or Southern California or Texas, where, you know, they probably sweetness isn't everything.
Right.
But that's a very good one. And it has a, you know, it looks like a tangelo, but it has a yellow skin to it. And And yet those, I go back to that growth, those have that cycle of growth that's much slower for gardeners to bring them into fruit.
Yeah. So for a lot of us, space is the thing. And I have friends who have lemons and limes, and they're growing them in really, really, really big containers. And they're, you know, decent size tree. They're small trees, but you know what I mean? They're big. It's not like a little small thing. I was fascinated to see, again, in that video I watched of you talking about citrus, sweet orange, I think it was called maybe Cipo, C-I-P-O, that's like pendulous or weeping and can be grown in a hanging basket. And then also like a miniature tree, the very heavy fruiting and sort of bushy looking, the Calamondin orange with the variegated leaves. And I think even the fruit was variegated. Some of these that are a little bit special in their habit, and in the case of that Calamondin, even in the show, extra showy because of the variegation. So are those some that are good for us to try, start with?
No, I mean, the question is like, how much room do you have?
Right. Okay.
So, you know, my house has just normal windows in it. So,
yes,
you know, it's going to be hard to put a 6-foot tree in there and have it do anything. However, there are the pruning shears, and they work very well at maintaining plants at any size. You know, I say always whenever you have a question about, think about a bonsai. Mm-hmm. And how they're cut back. However, there are citrus that are relatively small. The finger limes actually are pretty small plants. We have one that is a hybrid. It's called the Australian blood lime or Australian red lime. That's a hybrid between Citrus australasica sanguinea, that's the red finger lime, and a rancor lime. And it's a weeper. It doesn't ever go up. It only goes down. And this kind of bush. I think maybe on our website we have some mature pictures of a mature specimens of that plant. I have one that's been in a pot. It produces maybe 50 or 60 little round red limes a year. And it's no more than 1.5 feet, 2 feet tall. And never gets any bigger, just weeps. And we trim it. You have to always use pruning shears whenever you're managing.
The finger limes. I was going to say the finger limes are so. A friend of mine, Ken Drews, grows. I don't know which one it is, but it's a little more upright. And the fruits are long. Long, small, but long and dark green on the outside, and inside are those. I think they're called vesicles. It's like he calls it lime caviar. It's like inside are these little beads of flavor and incredible flavor. It's really wonderful, and it's not too big a plant. I mean, and yet he gets a lot, like you're saying, a lot of fruits.
Yeah, it's any of the finger limes. This is a hybrid, so the juice vesicles are a little bit more elongated than the round ones that you find in a finger, but they work just the same. And finger limes actually work very well as a container plant. We grow the regular green one, and we also have one called red champagne that's has, you know, red fruit and kind of darker pink flesh inside, or the beads or vesicles are darker pink. They're great indoor plants. They come from Australia, so first of all, you know, they got a tolerance to drought stress, and they're very bushy, but erratically bushy. So, you know, they do need, just to make them look nice, you need to cut them back. And they also will flower sort of on and off all year round, similar to what a regular lemon or lime would do.
Great. It's a great plant. Yeah.
But that said, we have an old employee, a friend that had worked for us for quite a few years and took a lime home. And, you know, that was about 20 years ago or so. And they contacted me and said they had to give it away. Then did we want it? And they sent me a picture of it, and it was, you know, it's good size, probably something you couldn't fit in your window. And you know, she was just didn't know what to do with this thing. It produced, you know, dozens and dozens of. And I said, just take a pair of pruning shears and cut it really hard.
Oh.
So you can prune citrus really, really hard, and you do that right as they begin to flush in the springtime. Just head that thing back down till it fit in the house. And the only downside, and they respond great to it. as long as the root system's healthy, obviously.
Yeah.
The only downside to it is they've got to make that first growth before they'll start to produce fruit again.
Right.
So, you know, coming off of some bud way down low on a stem, there isn't that whole organization of I want a fruit type thing going on. And,
right.
You know, they have to flush out. So it'll be two growths beyond that that they'll start to flower fruit again. And it worked for them. And now that plant, which is, I don't know, 30 years old or so, stays in the home and produces limes in its place.
Wow. One kind of plant that citrus that includes a lot of oddballs. If people like kind of eccentric things, I think, and I don't know if you say citron or citron, but C-I-T-R-O-N, there's like giant fruits and oddball shapes. Is that where the Buddha's hand fits in? I think the
yes.
Buddha's hand. Yeah.
That's a citron. Those are relatively tall growers. There's no way you're going to keep that at two feet
okay.
high. You can initially, but they are relatively crawled. And by tall, I mean, you probably can max out at 4 feet and then do some pruning on it. And we have, you know, Tirange variety, which is this massive fruit. It's huge. Then the Buddha's hand that we grow. And then a standard citron, which would be sort of a medium-sized fruit on that. They're great. And the interesting thing is the rind that is good to eat. It's sort of like sweet, and you can just bite it. And of course, they candy it, and it has a connection to the Jewish faith also.
So we have maybe 4 or 5 minutes left, and I wanted to ask about pests. A friend of mine who grows a number of lemon and lime trees and puts them out and then brings them back in the winter or fall, he said he had just sort of been trying to clean up scale insects on one of them before he brought it back in and so forth. Is scale a thing that happens? Are there any other pests that we should be on the lookout for? And how do we tackle those?
Right. So there's three insects that can affect them. The mites, and there's several mites that can get on citrus.
Okay.
And they're fairly easy to control. Then there's scale, which actually is fairly easy to control if you're persistent. And then there's mealybug, which can be problematic.
Yeah.
The good news is citrus have shiny leaves, so they are very tolerant to sprays. And what we recommend doing is before you bring them in, maybe a week or two before you bring them in, and just as you bring them in, make sure that they've been sprayed thoroughly with either an ultrafine horticultural oil or neem oil.
And okay.
The neem oil will be just a straight oil that you're going to, dilute with dishwashing detergent. The problem with the last two, scale and mealybug, is they have a very long sort of life cycle to them, and they can hide under the scales or in the cracks and crevices of trees, of the tree, and under leaves. And so the first thing is to have really good coverage, which isn't going to happen with a little hand spritzer. You need to get a pump sprayer that puts pressure on it and really blast the entire plant with it.
Okay.
For scale, you need to hit them. Preferably, you need to keep your eye even on the summertime when the soft shell is present. That's not that hard little brown bump, but it's a thin, light scale on the surface. And you get the crawlers along with that. And that is pretty effective. We've cleaned plants up of scale and never seen it again. So
okay.
It's something that you can eliminate, but you have to be persistent. One shot on any of those, even the mites, one shot is not going to do it. It has to be repeated. As far as mealybug goes, you need to do that probably on a weekly basis for 3, 4, 5 weeks. Just continue to spray it, because what you're trying to do is really get things you can't see, which are the crawlers,
right,
as they emerge from that cotton mass.
Yeah, mealybugs.
That's it. If you're persistent and you spray, the one other thing you want to, once you've sprayed an oil on a citrus plant, make sure that, you know, a day or two later you go and you wash it off with clear water before you put more oil on the leaf. It'll build up and cause damage.
Mm. You mentioned just, you know, the last couple of minutes here, you mentioned this tree, one of your citrus trees that's been there for ever for since what, like 1900 or something, you know, growing in the in-ground part of one of the older greenhouses. I mean, it really is a destination nursery. It's also a mail order business. You ship plants, I assume, all around the country. I mean, people
yeah.
are from all,
yeah, we've been shipping since the 1930s, so
yeah,
coming to 100 years.
Some of my oldest houseplants that live here with me are from, they got their start at Logie's. So my Boea, which now has, I don't know, a billion of those like green oniony looking things at its base, you know, a lot of them started their lives there with you. So I know I'm grateful. but it's really a great destination, almost like a tour, because the collection is so like a museum of unusual plants. Yes. I mean, people come just to look around and shop, but to have fun.
It's a great place to visit, particularly in the winter time when everything's drab and gray outside.
Yeah, so you're in Danielson, Connecticut, and I'll give information about, you know, about that as well. But I'm so glad to talk to you again, and congratulations to you and Laurelyn again on the new book, Edible Houseplants, which we'll have a giveaway with the transcript of the show over on awaytogarden.com. And I hope I'll talk to you again soon. I think I might be ordering some citrus. So thanks, Byron. You got me in trouble again. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And it's good to talk to all the rest of you again, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Stitcher or Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening and indoor growing meantime.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs. Flower bulbs for landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners at colorblends.com. Season your spring with Color Blends this fall.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.